This episode is brought to you by the European Coworking Assembly. We are everything Coworking Europe. If you head to the Coworking Assembly website, you can connect with our World Coworking, European Freelancers Week, Coworking Symposium, Coworking Library, and Coworking Tools.
Hello, folks, and welcome to this week's edition of the European Coworking Assembly podcast, which is the Coworking Values podcast. How many times can you say co-working in the beginning of a podcast? But without further ado, on the line from Portugal is my good friend Maria. So Maria, what are you known for and what would you like to be known for?
Wow, yeah, that's a really good question. Hi, Bernie. Thank you for having me. I'm known for being a translator and remote worker for a long time, more even before the days people talked about remote work. I'd like to be known for someone who has set up a rural co-working and co-living space and has managed to create a sustainable environment and endeavor.
I think you're well on your way there, and that's a very good aspiration. Can you say a little bit about the remote work thing? Because when people like me run around going, oh, I've been remote working for the last 10 years. And when did you start remote working and why did you need to start remote working?
Then the internet came in about in 1997, I think. And I started with the internet and I started receiving and sending work remotely on the internet. So it is the prehistory of remote work, this. It's very interesting. And it just gave me a real insight into remote work, in challenges and the discipline you need to have, the loneliness of the work, which I tried at the time to counteract by having a part-time job as an English teacher, because I needed to get out of the house as well. Translation work is lonely, so. From very early on, I had this perspective of remote work. And in those days, there were just a few of us. There were translators, designers, copywriters, maybe, and, writers. And people didn't talk about remote work that much. But we were there, sort of a lonely group of people. So it's really interesting to have this insight into freelance and remote work.
Did you know any other remote workers where you lived?
I knew a couple, but we were all sitting at home, working from home, mostly. We hardly ever met, to be honest. Also, at the time, I was a mother, so I had two children, and I was also dealing with, bringing up my children, trying to work around that. I think remote work is really good because it allows you to work around family life and it allows you to give more attention to your family and dedication. So it comes at a cost, of course. Then you need to work when children are asleep. But it was really good that I had more time to dedicate to my sons.
Did people take it seriously what you did, or understand what you did?
Yeah, there was this idea that people didn't know and weren't aware of what it was to work from home and to work remotely. So there were times when people thought, oh, let's go out for a coffee. And I would say, I'm sorry, I can't. But you are at home. So the idea was also that if you are at home, you're not really working sometimes. So people weren't always aware of remote work, definitely. Not like today.
I remember maybe 25 years ago having an argument with my neighbor, who was also my friend, by text on a Nokia phone. And he was playing music. He always played his music too loud and I didn't really mind, and I was working at home and I said, can you turn it down? I'm trying to work here and everything. And he sent me this long, this kind of angry long text that, And his main point was that I was working in a residential area, so I should expect, you know, residential things because I'm in a residential area, which was actually Zone 4 of London. So it was...
An interesting perspective that people had of work. Work wasn't done at home, right?
And also how people I know, you know, people in my family have worked for the same bank for like 300 years, and now they work from home like 4 or 5 days a week. They just, you know, that's it. And before, working from home is like they were allowed to work from home. It was a treat to be able to work from home on a Friday. And if you're working from home, you're not really working and all that kind of conversation. So you've just been at Co-working Europe in Porto, and what did you, which was alarmingly conveniently close for you. So what did you pick up from there? And was that the first time you've been to Co-working Europe, or have you been before?
Yes. No, it was the first time I've been to Co-working Europe conference. Because it was in Porto, it was so much easier to get to. And I also worked as a volunteer with the hosting team. And it was really, I was really inspired by the hundreds of participants we had there from so many different areas in this industry. It was really good to see that, you know, this sector is booming, both in terms of numbers and then in terms of different initiatives. And when it comes to rural co-working and co-living, there were also quite a few, there was a large group of people involved in rural co-working and co-living from Europe and from Japan, from the United States and Japan as well. So it was really inspiring to meet all these people, to talk to them, to connect and engage with them. And it was good to see that there are so many initiatives being born, workation initiatives, company retreats, pop-up co-working spaces in rural areas to make people aware of what co-working is. So they are great for awareness, and I thought that was really good. The one really good panel that I made a point of watching was the panel about economic success for remote and rural co-working spaces. And we had a group of people discussing how rural co-working spaces can be sustainable from the financial point of view, which is not easy. It is a challenge. Often it involves different models. So we had people from the connected hubs in Ireland, where it is, where they are mostly and they are exclusively a public initiative. And then I know of other models with public and private initiatives. In any case, even if a co-working space in a rural area is a private, exclusively private initiative, nothing can be done without the community and the municipality and the people in your area. So rural co-working space really is about connecting with building a community within and outside the co-working space.
So that little bit there reminds me of the co-working, the TiVo that we did with Vico and Simone in Porto at some point. And one of the, and I kind of knew about it, but that's the first time I'd seen it kind of like data from Elizabeth and people like that, like put out about this tension, which I'm going to ask you to talk a bit about, between someone coming in to a rural area like yours and making a co-working space and including the community and having people come visit that want to embrace what's going on, versus setting up a Starbucks and a TGI Fridays. And like the cities that we know that have just, I'd say, sold their soul to a certain type of digital nomad, and it's kind of taken the character and the culture and the essence away from what's going on. And there's this very fine balance of being able to do that in what I think is, what both of us think is the right way.
Yeah, it really is important to connect with people in your area. Ever since I arrived here, so we didn't mention it, but 2 years ago, I decided to move to a rural area. With my youngest son, we've got this project for a rural co-working and co-living in Arcos de Valdevez. And ever since I arrived, I've made a point of going out for walks, of talking to people and getting to know, joining local associations and organizations, being part, being there and talking to people and making them aware of this. It's not that difficult, really. One thing, there are challenges, of course, but if you talk to people and if you connect and relate to them, they will, and if they see you basically growing vegetables and doing things, they do accept you. So it's an exercise in connecting to other human beings. And to be honest, they're so lonely that I think they really appreciate the fact that there are newcomers into the village. So I think it's not that difficult. There is a balance. But you need to do it. You need to go out and speak to them. And I've been doing this for 2 years, and now people recognize me, and I join the local association. I go there, maybe go for long walks with them. They prepare nice lunches that I go to. There was a sort of women's lunch on Women's Day, and it was really nice to talk to people of several generations in that lunch. And they were all from the local village. So you can, and you should, and you have to connect with the local community. And it can be done.
That's what I love about this, you know, I'm going to say it's now our part of the world because we live about an hour away from each other, is how everything is centered around food. And in our Fento, which, you know, I still cannot believe that every day we sit down for at least 40 minutes and have lunch together. And that's something we always wanted to do and quite often did in different co-working spaces in London over the last, you know, 10 years. But for the whole co-working space, and there's only like 10 people there, but for everybody to sit down for lunch for that amount of time and the whole place stop is amazing.
I'm sure it is a great opportunity for people to connect, to talk, to engage, and it gives you a sense of belonging to a community. So there are many activities that you can develop for that. And of course, food. The idea that I have here with our rural co-working and co-living space called Noe Desk is that growing our own vegetables will be part of that as well. So somehow going back to basics and trying to grow our own vegetables and then cooking, learning to cook with those vegetables and prepare good meals and having workshops, dynamic sessions and all that. I think it's an important part of a rural co-working space.
I'm there already. This whole feeling, I've long been enchanted by the idea of a co-working, and people are articulating this and actually doing it, like, you know, way more and making it economically successful and sustainable too, is a co-working neighborhood workspace being part of the local community. There's things, particularly Town Square, articulate this really well in their What If Everyone Could Walk to Work document or report. Or it's actually the only report I really recommend people reading because it's just groundbreaking, and it talks a lot about the 15-minute city concept and how, you know, in the UK, which is where I grew up, people going to places of worship is less. There's no a lot of community centres and youth clubs are being closed down. People don't go out to local pubs and drinking in quite the same way. A lot of the high streets in the UK will look the same. They've been very homogenized and sterilized, and they're all brands and lost their soul. So a co-working space that is a multi-use space is a really, you know, strong connection point for people in the community, especially as, you know, most of us would go there to work and then do something else there. And I think it's a really precious evolution of, you know, essentially a building you rent a desk in.
Yes, it is, definitely. And also, municipalities are increasingly interested in rural co-working as and co-living as they drive community revitalization so much. So they are beginning, and I'm having a really fruitful dialogue with the local municipality about co-working and co-living. And they realize that rural co-working can drive rural areas, can contribute. So COVID has shown that we, you know, it is a, I think it's a very important part of rural co-working and co-living.
The Blue Zone thing is, I've been following Dan's work for a long time, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes, ladies and gentlemen, to, he did a condensed version of his Blue Zones idea in a Netflix documentary. And it's really, really interesting. And he actually cycled around the world as well, which was he had me out cycling around the world. That was one of the first things he did. But basically, folks, Miriam, do you want to say what a blue zone is?
Blue zones are zones where population lives much longer than other areas on the planet. And so people have been studying them to try and understand why people live so long. And so basically, you know, this is a very basic definition, but that's what it is. And they can contribute to the discussion of how can we keep on having a purposeful life when we get to a certain age.
And there's, this is really easy to remember, folks, is having, you know, that purpose, and a lot of that purpose comes from being with other people in community, which, you know, whatever you're doing, just seeing other people and making an effort to engage with them, diet obviously, and then exercise. And the bit that, and it's not like pummeling yourself in the gym every day, it's just like having been moving all the time. And one of the things that gave me hope here, and you know this, Maria, in Vigo here in Galicia where we live, it's very hilly. And there was a micro bit of research done where they couldn't work out how people in this particular Italian village lived, more of them lived over 100 than other villages nearby. And it's because the people that lived longest had to walk up a steep hill every day to go and get their bread and food. And that little walk up a very steep hill contributed to their, you know, overall health and wellness and determination and stuff. So when I have to walk up the hill here, which I do every day, I am, I know I'm going to live longer. That's it. Is there anything else that you picked up at co-work? I mean, I'm sure there's loads you picked up at co-work in Europe. Is there anything else you picked up at co-work in Europe that is pertinent and shareable?
Yes, apart from these different models that we also need to learn about and discuss. So one of the objectives of the European Rural Co-working Project, of which I'm a co-leader together with Claire Carpenter, our objectives is also to try and understand these different models to create rural co-working and co-living spaces that involve public and private initiatives. So we want to try and understand how we can have a dialogue with municipalities, how we can be part of the conversation to revitalize rural areas. And I thought this panel was also gave us some insights into these models and how we could, with collaboration between municipalities, rural co-working spaces, local businesses, local organizations and institutions, we can build a network and we can be, we all together in collaboration, we can be, you know, the glue that contributes to solving, you know, the problems of population aging and depopulation as well, which are common to all these areas.
They are. I'm amazed at how many old people in Vigo that are still active, but it is, I mean, London is a very different city to Vigo, but
yeah,
it is the amount of people walking early in the morning that are over 70 is phenomenal, and still out drinking, at midnight in bars. It's a great life. We'll put a link to Nowhere Desk, which is your space. Is that gonna be opening in 2024?
Yes, I think it is. We have been struggling with facilities. Of course, rural co-working and particularly rural co-living are quite heavy when it comes to real estate investment. So in these last 2 years, apart from trying to connect with the local municipality, the community, we've been looking into facilities, trying to go around the countryside, walking around, driving around, trying to find a property. We first bought a piece of land in a lovely village called Gondurish that is quite close to my heart already, because I've been growing vegetables there and trying to experiment. And we've planted lots of fruit trees. So we've been struggling with facilities. And for several reasons, because of inflation, the war in Ukraine, the context hasn't made it easier for us to build. And then I decided to start looking for houses. And I recently came across a lovely property in a village called Azra, which is it's very close to the town of Arkhangelsk. It's about between 2 and 3 kilometers only. So you can walk here, you can walk to town and find everything you need. And we found a property with a big piece of land. So next year, Nowhere Desk is taking off. And we're going to start doing some renovation. Luckily, the property is almost ready. We just need to do some renovation work, but it isn't structural. So we should be taking off next year. I'm very happy about it. It's a lovely old stone house, full of character and identity. It's typical of Minho region, also in part typical of Galicia, because we share these, we have this rich cultural heritage and historic ties. And you also find these types of houses, stone houses in Galicia. So we found it. It's going to take off next year, and I'm very excited about it.
I am very excited about it too. It was great going and seeing the town. It's great that it's an hour from Vigo Airport and an hour from Porto Airport. I feel between, like, you know, what we do at, yeah, I never say it right, Dynamo 10 with Joanna and Fento with Chris. There's this like lovely little rural hub feeling.
Yes.
Evolving.
So there's a community of co-working and co-living space owners or operators, if you want to call them. But we have a community also with Anseo co-living in Pontevedra, with Sende. So we have this community of people around. We talk to each other. We support each other. Also, Quinta da Quinhas, Patricia and Andrea from Quinta da Quinhas. So we share a lot of, we share our challenges and solutions. We work together and support each other. I think that's really important for rural co-working. You can't do it on your own. It is very much a collaborative effort. And if you have this connection with other co-working owners, co-working space owners, it really helps you get along.
It is quite magical. Where can we find you? Where's the best place to connect with you online? And we can put links to everything in the show notes. But if people want to follow what you're doing and send you fan mail, where do they do that?
Yes. If people want to follow what I'm doing, LinkedIn is a really good place to find me. Nowhere Desk is already there as well. We're going to develop also our profile on Instagram. Nowhere Desk already has a website, and we're going to start developing it soon. So we will also find noedesk.com online. We are going to be posting developments on these facilities and this new piece of land we found. We're going to be sharing everything we're doing and hopefully also getting insights from people and ideas. And we want this very much to be a collaborative space.
I can feel it already. So thank you very much for your time. I'm sure we'll see you again very soon. And ladies and gentlemen, if you go to just type in European Co-working Assembly or London Co-working Assembly, and you can find this podcast online there and all the other, I think it's like 150 podcasts we've done with people around the European co-working ecosystem over the years. And a lot of what we talk about is around inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility. And also this, what Maria and I have talked about here, that like very close connected local pixie dust co-working magic. So be careful out there. It is a jungle. And thanks for your time and attention today.
Thank you.
Bye.